Whether you keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs, these are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast. Boom! What's up, everybody? We're late.
We're a little bit late.
But
it's my fault.
It's okay. It's 100% Rob's fault and maybe also the fault of my internet. But we're here. We're here and we're happy to be here. And I'm super excited about tonight.
And I'm Rob and I'm creeping it real.
Oh, I didn't even introduce. Damn. This is the second time we've done this. We've messed it up.
Second time.
What's up, everybody? This is Jeremy Turgeon from Brass Man Reptiles.
And I'm Rob and I'm creeping it real.
That's better. I'm really excited about tonight. Sorry, I'm if pumped. You can't tell.
Yeah, we've been out over our skis a little bit excited for this one. So
it's very true.
We didn't want to mess it up, but we ended up doing it anyway.
Messed it up.
So without further ado, I'm super excited because we have got Mike Curtin from Scattershot Exotics. What is going on, man? How you doing?
Bam!
What's going on, guys? How are you? It's good to see you again.
It is. Yeah, man, awesome, it's great to see you. It's been a minute. I feel like since COVID and lack of expos and all that stuff, it's been a long time since I've seen you.
It's been brutal, you know. I've been trying to make it up to the New England show. Up in Manchester, and I haven't been able to get up there.
Honestly, I skipped the first one. That they were like, guess what? It's just open enough for COVID for us to have a reptile expo. And I was like, you dirty. No, I'm not doing that. I skipped the first one. I was like, there's no way I'm going to get COVID at a reptile expo. Not happening. And then the most recent one, I was like, you know what? I'll be safe. We'll bring Lysol. I'm going to wear masks. Everything's cool. We're gonna do it. And so we did the last one. It went pretty well, and everything was spaced out fairly well. So I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, me too. I'm definitely looking forward to getting back out and seeing people again.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's been too long. Like, seriously, it's been freaking way too long.
Yep. So, Mike, for people who might not have heard of you, if they're not like in the Morelia groups or you know,
or they're not just into reptiles,
not into
they
reptiles,
should just know this man.
Well, listen, the people on the interweb, sometimes they just bought their first pet bearded dragon and they haven't heard of Mike Curtin yet.
Well,
so for those people,
you're hearing right
they're going to hear right now. But like what got you started in reptiles? What kind of led you on your trajectory to where you're at right now?
I've always been into reptiles, always. You know, my dad taking me fishing as a kid. I'd be catching frogs and looking for snakes and doing all that stuff. You know, Rod, you know, sitting on a stump somewhere, and you know, I was flipping logs, and you know, up to my ankles or my knees in mud. You know, just catching frogs all over the place. And my dad was great. He said, you know what? Have fun. We're out here having fun. If you don't want to catch fish, that's all right. You know, it was more about the time than anything.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. And now I love both, you know. So
I was just gonna say you post a lot of fishing stuff. I like seeing that.
Oh yeah. 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 I'm hardcore surf caster, you know. So I'm all over the place. All hours, but you know, from that to just books and reading about them, you know, like just about everybody that grew up in the 80s and the 90s, my parents had a big box of National Geographic magazines down in the basement. I'd be flipping through them, you know, you know, I tell the same story to a lot of my piercing clients, because that actually kind of sparked my interest in body mods and piercing and tattoos, scarification, because of all the, you know, the culture of all those native tribes. So you'd be looking at all these crazy reptiles and animals from around the world and all these really, really interesting cultures. I was really drawn to it. I guess I was probably about fourth grade when I got my first snake. This kid that was I was in school with, you know, he had a garter snake that he couldn't keep anymore. So he asked me if I wanted it. You know, it was $10. I said, all right, yeah. I ran home, asked my mom and dad. They're like, yeah, all right, yeah, sure.
Why not?
And, you know, what was crazy is after that, I mean, it was full steam ahead. My parents, they'd go on vacation to see their friends down in Florida, and, you know, they'd sneak Green Anoles on the airplane back for me from Florida.
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
It was great. It was great. You know, they'd come home from Florida. It's like, dad's like, got a surprise for you.
God, that's great.
It's always been an interest of mine. I always love reptiles. You know, it's been a long time keeping them. I got away from them for a little while, I guess back in, it was 2003, 2004, this garter snake just comes slithering around, you know, in front of the shop that I was working at. And I pick him up, and it was probably November. It was like a warm November. Oh, and maybe October into November. So I pick him up, bring him home, and you know, bring him home to my wife. I say, hey, look what I found.
And we got a new pet.
We kept him to the spring. I then let him go. And I said, you know what? I want to get back into snake, you know, and I told her that, hey, I used to keep snakes, used to keep all kinds of reptiles. I said, I'd like to get snakes. She's like, okay, can I have spiders? So she's got a few Brazilian blacks. She loves her tarantulas. And I got the snakes, and we've had everything in between.
I love that.
So what was it like when you saw your first carpet python? Is that a special moment? Because I feel
all
like
right. So my first carpet python I ever saw, it was so cool because it was a Diamond X carpet python, right? So I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm in this pet store on Route 22 in, I don't know, it was like Greenbrook, North Plainfield area, and anybody who's familiar with Jersey. And I don't even remember the name of the pet shop. And I went in there and I'm looking at these things, and they got this beautiful naturalistic setup and beautiful water feature, the whole nine yards. And I'm like, what's the deal? And it was like $250. So, and I was young, so for me, that was a lot of money. I said, what's so? Yeah. So tell me about that Diamond X carpet python. No, you don't want that. You don't want that. They're mean. They're aggressive. Like everything you hear, you don't want this. They're terrible pets. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So I went and I got a retic.
What? Oh my God.
Not
I was shrinking just then. What?
Mike, I know, you know, April Fool's was a few days ago, man. You can't just be
true story. I couldn't stop thinking about this carpet python, right? And not too far later, my brother says, hey, listen, my roommate's coworker just hatched a clutch of pythons and didn't tell me like what they were. I'm like, oh, cool. Like what kind? What are they? Oh, they're reticulated pythons. Now, reticulated pythons, like for me, everybody, kid growing up, you hear about reticulated pythons back in the day, and you read about in the books, oh, they lay 100 eggs.
Yeah.
You know, they get 30 feet long. I'm like, wow, that's awesome, right? So I'm like, really?
Oh, boy.
So I met up with this guy, and I was 16 at the time, I think. Went to his house, and he had the mom of that clutch was a wild-caught Sulawesi female.
Wow.
She was over 20 foot. According to them, she was 24 feet, which it's unheard of.
Yeah.
Her first clutch of eggs, 96 eggs.
Wow.
96 eggs was her first clutch of eggs. This is back in, 94, I think.
Wow.
And,
damn.
And they were all small. And the babies were small. But they got big. They got big.
Yeah.
My male, when I gave my male away, he was 16 plus.
Wow.
16 plus foot. Heavy body. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's what I got instead of a carpet python because they're mean.
A Sulawesi retic. Jeez.
The fascination never left me. So when everything came full circle and I went into a pet store. I just picked up a Reptiles magazine. It was the issue with Will Leary.
And,
you know, I saw that Diamond X, but no, I saw that Diamond Jungle on that centerfold, and I'm like, man, I'm like, I think I need to get carpet pythons. Like,
yeah.
I fell in love all over again. Within, I don't know, 6 months to a year, I was at a White Plains Expo. I bought my first jungle. He's actually up in the cage behind me. And that was Delia. Delia's actually in a prelay shed right now.
That's awesome. So
she's close to, she was, I think she's about a year and a half or so when I bought her. And that was back in 2003, 2004, I think it was.
That's crazy.
And and then it was, you know, with her, it was like one after the other. I couldn't stop. and then just a fascination. I had a fascination with Australia. Remembering when Crocodile Dundee came out. I'm dating myself right now. There's something so raw and primitive and wild about Australia. Next thing you know, I'm getting Woma pythons. And then I'm getting blackheads. And it's just, it just kept on going. And I just never looked back.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
That's crazy. Cause like I got my first pet snake right around 2003 too. It was just like a normal ball python. But I still have him too. He lives with my mom now, but I still have him. He's like 19 years old. I had him.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's been 18 years. Are you kidding me right now?
It's okay, Rob.
It's wild. It's wild to think about. And then I got my first short tail probably 14 years ago. That's crazy to me. And I still have him too.
That snake's as old as some of my students.
Some of the kids who come to the shop, man. Oh, it's so long.
Oh, man.
So the carpets definitely drew you, but like you got a big draw for Australia. And then more recently, you've been getting into the big colubrids. I just want to go out on record and say I'm here for it 100%.
Yes. Dude, I don't like anybody listening. When you hear like, oh, don't get Kribos because they're messy and they smell bad and they're dirty and they're a nightmare to clean and blah, blah, blah. Don't listen. Yes, they'll paint the walls occasionally, but it is well worth it. I just put a video up of my middle son, my 10-year-old, with Frenchie, our long-term captive yellowtail. Now, I mean, she's probably a good, 7-8 foot. And she's got an attitude. I mean, you take her outside and put her in the sun, that's a wild snake. He this was the first time this year that we had her out. So Chase was a little standoffish, a little hesitant, but, early last fall, I had her out, and I just, especially with the Kribos, I like taking them out for some exercise. Let them cruise, let them stretch, let them do their thing. Cause they're such fast, active snakes. I think it's really important to let them be them. So I had her out in the yard, and here comes Chase with his friends, and he's like, "Oh, Dad, is that Frenchie?" I'm like, "Yeah, can I pick her up?" I'm like, "Yeah, but she'll probably get here." And he's like, "All right." So I mean, it was straight up like watching Crocodile Hunter. It was like watching Steve Irwin. he picked her up, probably about the midpoint of her body, real gently. And she starts coming across her body with her mouth wide open. he sets her down, takes two steps back, circles around, picks her up again. And he worked her so beautifully. Now I teach my boys proper handling, how to read snakes, how to know what they're thinking. For us, when we look at an animal, when we look at a snake especially, we can tell, okay, so that snake's looking for food right now, mm-hmm. or that snake probably not having a real good day. Probably doesn't want to be messed with. So we can read them like that. So I try and teach him that as best I can. But he got that snake from open mouth, lunging at him to where he was handling her and letting his friends come over and pet her, within about 15 minutes.
That's gotta be so humbling. To watch your kid do that, man, I would be so geeked.
The natural instinct and ability he showed was, I was in awe. I was like, wow, that's really cool.
That's so awesome.
That's so awesome.
I'm really, so I started with carpet pythons, from like a breeding standpoint. Getting back into snakes after I took an alcoholic holiday for several years where I didn't keep anything. Mm-hmm. I quit drinking and started a family, and next thing you know, it's like, all right, so now I get back into snakes, and my wife and I start talking about the idea of breeding. It's like, I'd like to breed these. She's like, well, if you want to do it, go ahead. And so we started doing that. Over the past several years, there's a lot of species that I've been really interested in, but at the same time intimidated by. Kribos among them, rhino rats, because I had heard about them. But when I was first hearing about them, they weren't easy to keep. There were a lot of problems with them because they were just being kept incorrectly. Owen and Eric has talked about it a bunch of times when Owen got his rhinos, and I'm like, put my glasses on, staring at him like, oh,
that's so cool. Yeah.
Once that's one of the things that a lot of new keepers now, would be very well to kind of ponder on, because it's not that, hey, I got rhinos and figured them out and now I'm keeping them great. It's like, no, there's guys out there like Rob Stone in particular,
yes.
they put in the work, you know, they put in the work and figured out how to do it, figured out what everybody was doing wrong, figured out why everybody was killing these things. And now I get to enjoy, like, hey, okay, so now I got like a group of beautiful rhino rat snakes and I know how to keep them because someone else did the work for me. You know, Womas, back when I started breeding Womas, you know, not a lot of people were being really successful breeding them. You know, and to like my first clutch of Woma eggs was like 14 eggs. And I just, you know, how many hatched? One.
I was gonna say like one or two. That's the plight of people who breed Womas. The first clutch is like, no matter how good you think you are, it's one or two babies that come out of it.
And it's like you just watch them die. You just watch the eggs. You watch them get that wet, dark look about them. Oh, and there's the green ring. It's like, oh, there it comes. All right, that one's dead. But I had two clutches that year. The second clutch, I hatched 9. So it's just the listening to the people that have put in the time and the work and the effort and lost a bunch of animals, figuring them out, and being humble enough to say, all right, I need to change some things, you know. Some people, they get a little too set in their ways where, you know, oh, well, you know what, this is how it's supposed to be done. I don't know what's wrong. Well, you got to listen to your
animal. You're not doing it right.
Yeah, man.
That's something that in the blood and short tail community has been just starting to catch up right now with a lot of the misinformation from the 90s and early 2000s, because, you know, back in the day, people would be like, blood pythons are all evil and you got to keep them at 95 degrees and they live in a swamp. So keep them at 100% humidity. If it's not dripping wet inside the enclosure, they're not happy. And they would have these like miserable snakes that would just like bite them and pee on them. And they were unhappy.
That was me.
They were unhappy. They had no idea. And then now, you know, coming to Bloods and Short Tails, learning from all those people who made all those mistakes back then and just didn't keep them properly and couldn't get them to breed and all that sort of stuff. And then seeing how they experimented and changed, you know, nowadays most people keep their Bloods and Short Tails at like 82 degrees and they keep them like a good size water dish, plenty of humidity. You're cool. As long as they can drink and stay hydrated, then don't go crazy. And being able to reproduce them has become significantly easier now than it was, you know, 15 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm grateful for all those people who shared that information with me, because man, I'm so glad that I'm coming for a point now where I can breed stuff and I can make some pretty cool animals, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy because back in the day, like a lot of people were, you know, pretty hesitant about sharing information.
Oh yeah.
And you know, they didn't want the recipe going out, you know?
Yeah.
And I think what I learned back then still holds true today, which is, and well, let's be real. Like back then, you know, texting was called writing a letter.
Yeah, so, sharing that information was
effort. Not like I could shoot a text, hey, how do you keep and breed this species, right?
Yeah,
right.
So you needed, I mean, yeah, we did have like the forums late 90s, early 2000s. We did have the forums going on, which was cool. Actually, yeah, it was the 2000s.
2000s,
and I started going on stuff like that, where you started getting some information, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, the real information, like the meat, that's what you got spending time with people and actually building relationships, you know? And I mean, that's really what's driving me like now, is the relationships. You know, yeah. speaking of fishing, like at least once a year, I try to have a herp fishing trip. So, you know, we go out on my buddy's, buddy owns a fishing charter out of Point Pleasant Beach. And a bunch of us get together and we hang out and we catch fish and we talk snakes and talk reptiles.
That's
just
awesome.
Have a great time and just connect and you'll learn more in those. And not saying that's the only reason for the relationship, but
right.
You'll learn more from people in relationship than you ever will asking questions on a forum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
That's one of the main reasons why I really love the podcast format and, you know, valuable resources like NPR. Cause it's like getting to sit in on one of those conversations. That's why me and Jeremy started Reptile, or like redid Reptile Talk, was to have these conversations where, you know, we might not always be talking about, oh, this is how you keep this and this is how you breed this.
Right.
But the little information that you pick up when you're having a conversation with people who are into reptiles, you can pick up so many useful things. And the fact that it's documented, or at least part of it can be documented now and shared on a format that's accessible to a lot of people is really awesome to me. I think that's like so incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, you guys, I'm sure you guys have both made fun of me for my flip phone. Right.
No, I have not. Cause I was, adapter.
At least not on the podcast. That's
not publicly.
Okay, not publicly, but you know the deal. Cause we've hung out at White Plains and you've seen me break out the flip phone and you went, like for real. So like, you know, I finally, you know, I wasn't even able, just a basic text message, just can't even get him anymore. So I finally, like this Christmas, I'm like, all right,
I'll do the thing,
take the plunge.
Yeah.
So now it's like, you know, I'm listening to, I was listening to NPR right along, you know, I bring it up on my laptop and listen that way. But now it's so much more accessible where, you know, I'm listening to it in the car, you know, back and forth from work. And you know, it's great because you just learn so much.
Yes.
And especially like the natural history stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Which, you know, people, we miss that, right? We kind of shoot right past what are they doing in the wild? All right. And go right to, okay, how do we keep and breed these? Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, talking to, you know, I started talking to Derek Roddy years, probably back 2007, 2008. And you know, just through having just long conversations, you know, and developing a friendship, you know, he got me rethinking heating my animals, right? So my heat, you know, drops down. I do a night drop year round. Okay. So what is it at? They're at 76 right now. Okay. So that's the hot spot, is at 76 at nighttime, because in the wild, they're not having access to basking 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So even during my summertime, they're going to still get that night drop. It's not going to drop as low. You're still going to have a warmer ambient heat, ambient temperature in the room, but they're going to get a drop. They're not going to be able to bask 24/7. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, little things like that. And then you notice your animals, and you notice what they're doing, and their behavior is changing. And now it's like you can sit in your room and you can pattern an animal and you can just like, what? Okay. And you kind of know, I know that at 8 o'clock in the morning, when I come in my snake room every one of my carpets is going to be basking. Every one of them. They're going to be coming out, and they're going to be getting that morning heat. And they're behaving the way snakes behave. My rhinos, they've got no heat except for they get basking for 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Early afternoon, they get 2 hours for basking. And they'll bask, and they're super active, and they're great. That's where, learning the natural history of the animal has really helped a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of that information wasn't available, as readily as it is today. Which is why, podcasts like this and like NPR, are so great. They're just invaluable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I what's interesting is I was just doing another podcast earlier in the week, and we were talking about like building the relationships and networking with people to get information like this. And I'm like, man, it is so much easier to do now than it was years ago. But it seems like now that information is right here, we're like, nah, that's fine. I'll just go around it. And then, and it's not until you're sitting there scratching your head because you can't figure something else out that you come back, mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh man, if I had just taken an hour of my time, to check out this podcast or reach out to so-and-so through a freaking Facebook message and not through, writing a letter of please, please just respond to me with a little information, I would have, not had 6 months of headaches,
Sure.
So, yeah. But yeah, establishing these relationships, it's like, that's key, man.
So critical.
One of the things that Scott Borden's been talking about, like Scott and I are on the same page with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've been talking about is pet keepers. And not necessarily breeders. Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple conversations like that. I just started a reptile group here in Ocean County. And so the hope is that it grows and eventually can become a statewide thing. And there's another fellow in the state that is trying to do a herpetological society and trying to get all the paperwork and everything going for that. So the hope is to have a good, strong, robust herpetological society in the state. But I got a message, in the Ocean County group where it's like, hey, listen, I want to just do an end of summer barbecue, get together, get to know each other in person.
Yes.
Bit right along the lines of Carpet Fest. Carpet Fest is one of the best things to ever come out of the Morelia community because of the fact that so many people from so many walks of life that can just go and hang out. And you've been to Carpet Fest and Rob, you've been to Carpet Fest?
I went to Southeast Carpet Fest last year, right before COVID hit. And then that's the only one I've been to. I didn't get a good chance to go to the OG one. I work too much. I work way too much. That's basically my work schedule has been too crazy.
Dude, Scally will stash you in a cooler with the lobster and smuggle you down.
You know what? I talked to Scally, but the last 2 years that it happened, I talked to him like 2 days before. And the last time that it happened, I was like, I'm definitely going. And then that next day, work was like, yeah, we need you here, so you cannot go. And I was like, oh,
because then I had to spend the entire day answering the "What happened to Rob?" question.
Where did Rob go? Yeah,
that was.
I did not ask you that question.
You did not. I appreciate that very much, sir.
So this one woman in the group, she said, "Hey, listen, I'm really interested in reptiles. I really don't have a lot of knowledge. Like, would this event be open to people like me? And I'm like, this is for people like you.
For you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is especially for you. Like, and that's how these relationships happen, which is, for me, that's one of my favorite parts of keeping. Like, the hardest thing about COVID for me is I got friends like all over the country that I only see every few months.
Yeah.
And, you know, missing out on seeing all you guys, like, dude, it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. That has been very rough for me, because as someone who's like very extroverted and likes to go and do things and see people. Oof.
I miss bacon cupcakes.
Yes. Yes.
I miss them. I want a bacon cupcake.
So here's the deal. I have shipped people bacon cupcakes before.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, before you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention.
Oh, man.
So let me get something together, because I have a couple people in Florida who I need to send them to.
A few orders.
There's a couple people who like have seen my cupcakes and have been friends with me for like 10 years, and they haven't
had a cupcake.
When I did the Florida expos, I didn't have a kitchen to make one.
Yeah.
So they've been like, you should just send me some. And I'm like, shipping cupcakes sucks. But
yeah,
you know what? I might have to do a little COVID.
COVID care package.
Care package.
The COVID cupcake care package.
I can't say that three times fast.
Me either.
That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
It's
weird, because like, think about that, right? That's something that's like not really reptile related, but it's kind of reptile related, because it would just be at the expos. You'd hit that like 1 or 2 o'clock time slot where you're like, oh my God, I got a little slime time. I'm
and
a little
all
hungry.
Of a sudden,
and all of a sudden you
Rob,
see
here comes container. Rob with a tray of cupcakes. And everybody at the table's like, this guy just delivers like cupcakes? Yeah, he does.
And he's going to be your new best friend now.
I get some, you get none. I'm just kidding. His kids always got some if they wanted them.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. That is amazing. Okay, we're going to take a quick 90-second break for an ad break, because we have a sponsor.
Hey.
And that's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool. You guys get to check out this wonderful video real quick, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
We are super happy to announce our partnership with Oasis Exotic Enclosures, a new startup cage manufacturer based in California. Matt and Steph Connard have taken their time developing a wonderful quality product. The VS31 enclosure is their flagship model. It's 31 inches by 20 inches by 20 inches. It's perfect for many smaller species of colubrid, boa, python, or even some nocturnal lizards. Made with industrial-grade polyethylene plastic via in-house rotational molding, these cages have the strongest bonds in plastic manufacturing. Each enclosure has molded-in inverted handles on the sides, making moving from one place to another easier than ever. Each cage also has bolt-threaded inserts to allow you to connect cages vertically or secure them to a wall, creating impregnable security for that ever-growing collection. Also, a wonderful addition, the option to receive wall mounting brackets for your enclosure. That's right, you can attach this cage to any wall in your house at any height you desire. This wonderful patent-pending adaptation provides you the ability to take that cage you have just placed on a table or on the floor up higher without wasting valuable floor space. This also allows you to no longer loom above your pet before entering the enclosure, which is often a high cause of stress. Matt and Steph have just begun their journey into cage manufacturing and have worked to put out a quality product at a comparable price to other companies in the industry. More innovations and designs are forthcoming, and we are excited to see Oasis Exotic Enclosures grow and develop. Please go check them out on Instagram at Oasis Exotic Enclosures and on the web at www.oasiscages.com. Boom, you can go check that out. All the links will be available here on the YouTube video description. And if you're just checking out the audio, you can check out all of that stuff there as well. It'll all be linked there too. So, bam, back to bacon cupcakes.
He's like, don't let me think that you forgot about the cupcakes here.
Oh no, I didn't.
There was a promise.
Oh
Made
man,
my loin quiver.
Okay, so jeez. Okay, are we going down that road?
No.
Talking again. Jeez. Okay, so we got to talk about this because it's a project that you have teased me about.
Oh.
That you teased me about for many years at White Plains, bringing me to your table to stare at these wonderful carpet pythons that for the longest time I could never afford.
Not my fault.
And then finally was able to afford them, and now I have a few here or there, and that's the ocelot jungle carpet python stuff. So there's not a lot of open information out there. I feel like anytime I post a picture of an ocelot jungle jag, I get like 10 or 15 messages like, what the hell is the ocelot gene?
I'm tagged in it.
Yeah, yep. generally that's how it goes. I feel like
which is fine, which is great.
Yeah, I feel like if you haven't already, you should have like something you can just quickly copy and paste for response.
On the notes on your phone, you can have a little thing.
You know what? Flip phone until December, guys.
That's fair. So I remember being at White Plains for many, many shows. And I'd be walking around. She's like, oh, Mike's here. I'm gonna say what's up to Mike. And before I can even get within 3 feet of Mike's table, I just see like shining, gleaming yellow
neon
carpet pythons.
Yellow,
and I'm like,
glowing.
What the f- is that? Worms. And then Mike's like, you want that? And I'm like, I do want that. But then Mike also says, it's not for sale. And I'm like, yuck, yuck!
You got to keep the best for yourself, man.
It's true. So can
thank you for not asking me how much for the NFS.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I usually am pretty good at understanding acronyms. So, so can you just kind of, I know that it's kind of like a long explanation of the history of the gene, but can you just kind of give like a short synopsis of the ocelot jungle gene?
Okay, so 2008, well, prior to that, you know, I jags were still pretty high dollar, and they were, for me, they were fascinating. That same Will Leary article in Reptiles, I remember seeing Benjamin, and it's like, man, them things are awesome, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm talking to at White Plains to Jay McClear, and he was, I think he was the first one to do to breed jungles into it in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And so he had these jungle jags, and it's like, okay, it's gonna be a jag, and it's gonna be like bright yellow, and they were okay, they were 50% jungle jags, so. Had to have one, and I got one, bred him to my girl Delia, and super excited. Out of that, one of the first eggs that I opened up, so they started pipping. So I'm kind of peeling them back, open them, seeing what's inside. And I post a picture on Morelia, MoreliaPythons.com. Mm-hmm. So I post a picture, and all of a sudden everyone's like, what is that? I knew there was something with that one baby. So that baby was Jigsaw. As the conversation progressed, Nick Mutton jumps in. I think Paul had jumped in as well because Nick had said, listen, that looks like what Paul had produced over in Europe. That looks like an ocelot. So he had produced one the year prior, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more we're looking at it, it's like, yeah, that looks like it's probably the same thing. So I raised him up. I bred him to his paternal aunt, and wound up with a number of ocelots. I remember coming home. It was like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, coming home from fishing, And, you know, I went, checked the eggs, and they had pipped. And I was like, I looked, and sure enough, you know, and that was Link. And, I was jumping up and down in the snake room, and my wife, she's looking at me laughing. She's like, and I mean, she knew the significance. She was excited for me.
Yeah.
So I continued to work with that, with other JAGs, and, you know, just focusing on that mutation within the JAG gene. The more I spoke to Nick Mutton, you know, he's like, listen, he says, Paul's jungle that he used in that pairing, that was a high percentage jungle JAG. That was ocelot. It was 75%, just like Jigsaw. He says, that was done with US jungle blood. Right. So I said, okay. So he says, I'm wondering if that's not a mutation in the jungle that people just don't realize it's so subtle. Mm-hmm. You know, when you deal with carpet, and one of the things that drew me to carpet pythons is there's so many little variations and little anomalies from one to the next to the next.
Yeah.
You can have two coastals and look at them, more so than jungles, but really with coastals. And it's like, holy cow, like they look like two completely different snakes. You wouldn't even think they're the same species.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that fascinated me so much about them. So when he started talking about that, it's like, you know what? The wheels started kind of turning. And I started thinking, okay, so what if I can kind of isolate that from the JAG? Because I am noticing that in the normal non-JAG siblings, I'm seeing little anomalies in the pattern, that little flecking, that peppering where it looks kind of pixelated, right along their sides, usually up by the neck, and I'm noticing that. I was like, what if I could just do that? So, I took Jigsaw and. Jigsaw and I think it was Pepper, which were two very high expression ocelot JAGs. And I know everyone says, don't do JAG to JAG. I've got no problem doing JAG to JAG. We can dig into that too later if you want. But the normal offspring from that pairing, I was like, boom, that's it.
That's
like,
it. Yeah.
The normal pairing were such... They were high expression, non-JAG ocelots. And Jeremy, that's that female I sent you a picture of.
Oh, yeah.
So I wound up getting to where I was able to isolate that trait away from the JAG gene. So the way it works, it does seem to be a polygenic trait that is... through line breeding, you know, it is being passed on that way. I did a normal caramel to a high expression ocelot JAG and wound up with a smoking caramel ocelot JAG.
I remember that.
Holy cow. Absolutely. And so we're getting ready to go to our Sunday church gathering. And this thing is, you know, I'm super excited. Probably three quarters of the clutch had already pipped. And I'm looking in, and I could see the pattern. I could see the color, and she's all wrapped up and upside down, umbilicus wrapped around her. I'm like, I opened that up the rest of the way. I pulled her out, you know, kind of got everything unwrapped, and I just left her in the egg, and I prayed. And she survived, she made it, and she wound up, she was the first one to feed, and she wound up being super healthy. I wish I had a happy ending, but Nido got her, which was devastating. Absolutely, it crushed me. But with that animal, you know, Nick's comment was, well, that turned out better than I had thought, because, you know, I've got a caramel from Europe, right? Mm. And completely, you know, pure coastal, completely unrelated to anything in the States. And I breed her to Jigsaw. And I wind up with this super high expression ocelot. So there are anomalies like that where they'll pass them on first generation, like, it's like, holy cow. Most of them, you'll see those subtle anomalies. All right. You'll see the ocelli. All right. Where you've got the circles where the interior color is the same as the ground color of the rest of the snake, as opposed to most jags where the interior color is darker. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So you'll see those with my line in particular. You see a lot of that pixelated peppering look. You know, usually the first third to half of the body is where it's most heavily anomalous right there. But those are the two main traits that you see with my line of ocelots. But since then, you know, most of the ocelot pairings that I'm doing have been in the past to get that more extreme non-jag ocelot see how far I can kind of go with that. This season I've kind of gone back a little bit to where, you know what, I'm going to put some real high yellow stuff back into them, you know, which is great because I love neon yellow snakes and you know that.
Yep.
Well, you did it. Like,
yep. Yeah, exactly.
So, and yeah, you know, so for the past, you know, with the ocelot stuff, for the past 10 years or so, I've just been trying to get the brightest, most extreme version of that mutation with the brightest yellow possible, and just continuing to refine it.
Yeah, dude, and man, these, if you've never seen an ocelot or an ocelot jag, you got to Google it, or you need to go check out Scattershot Exotics.
I mean, that would probably be the better
place. That's probably the better place to do it, because, man, oh man, when you see these,
there's something else. Like, there's going to the White Plains Expo and just seeing the tower.
Oh, is he doing it?
Seeing the tower.
Look at it.
Oh yeah. Mm-mm. And the camera makes it less yellow than it actually is, because I know that thing glows. Oh, that's such a nice.
They're awesome. They're awesome. They blow my mind. I stare at them,
dude. When I'm going through cleaning stuff in my room and I get to one of the ocelots, I'm like, we're gonna spend some time right here.
I don't have a ton of carpet pythons, but I do have an ocelot jungle jag female, and she's pretty.
Everyone needs one.
I would venture and say yes.
Yeah.
I'm not usually someone who goes and slaps that sticker on a lot of things, but yes, I agree. Because you know what? The carpet pythons, they've got this like good size. When they get big, they're not usually too jerks. They're not usually that bad for handling. They perch. You can make a nice looking enclosure, and they'll utilize the nice enclosure. And they've got all these different little things that just make them great for everyone, whether you've got one snake or whether you've got 100 snakes.
Mm-hmm.
You need one. You need one.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had a number of people come up to me at White Plains and kind of come over to the table, look, walk around, come back, and then say, like, listen, I want the prettiest animal that I can just, I want to put it on display in a big cage.
Yeah.
And I think if you have the room to do a nice naturalistic enclosure, the amount of yellow that just pops.
Puts UV lights on it.
Yes.
I mean, it's, they're really, really cool to look at. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And that's one of the things I really enjoy is, you know, when somebody says, I want something beautiful that I can just look at every day. Mm-hmm. And it's like, cool. And you want one of my animals. And that's like, it's, that's humbling. That's great.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
You know,
See, I mostly keep bloods and short tails, so you don't put those in a big ass display cage.
Get in your bin.
Yeah, go into your bin. I'll take you out. We'll hang out on the couch for a little bit. I'll put you back. Everything's cool.
Yeah. Like, sheesh.
But well, a carpet python.
That's another thing that, you know, most, you know, a lot of people, sometimes we forget to enjoy the animal for what they are.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, with the bloods and short tails, they're impressive animals.
Mm-hmm.
If you want them to climb trees, oh, and like, you're probably
maybe
not
disappointed.
Gonna,
yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to be excited about having them in a beautiful display enclosure.
Yeah.
And
they're probably not going to be happy
about, you know, what you're looking for and what the animal is.
Exactly.
And that's another thing that as keepers, we are really, as keepers, we really need to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Where, these, you do your research and you say, okay, this is what I'm looking to get out of an animal. And this is what I think I want to get, you know?
Yeah. And you kind of got to work within the parameters of what you are trying to do. Cause I get a lot of people in like the blood and short tail groups and they're like, I want to make a 8-foot long bioactive live planted vivarium. And I want to put a blood python in there. And I'm like, well, no, it's going to dig up all your plants. It's going to pee and turn all your soil very acidic. It's going to ruin your plant system. And it's probably not going to be super happy in there. There's lots of other animals that would do great in that, but bloods and short tails really aren't the one to do it. And they're like, I've got this idea of what I want the snake to be. And it's like, that's not what the snake is though. You're not working within the reality of what is going on outside of you. Like, I get that you have good intentions, but you have to understand what the snake wants, because at the end of the day, it's not about what you want. I mean, yes, you want to have a nice planted enclosure, but maybe you want a different species. Put a corn snake in there. You want to see something that's going to use your whole enclosure and not ruin your plants and stuff? Put a corn snake in there. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to appreciate it a lot.
And I think that's one of the things that, excuse me.
doing the teacher thing?
Doing the teacher thing. Class, I'd like you to pay attention now. No. I don't necessarily know 100% like in other countries, but I know in the US, like, we're very good at having these preconceived notions of like, this is what I expect it to be, this is what I want it to be, and if it's
better
not
that
I'm throwing a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you know, so many other countries, like I always think like musically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I can go do a corporate gig, like a wedding gig or, you know, anything like that. And if I play original music, I can guarantee you I'm going to get a volume complaint.
Yeah.
But if I don't touch my volume knobs and play a Michael Jackson cover, everybody's dancing, having a grand old time and whatever, because they're just like, live music, you're here to entertain me. It doesn't matter that you are your own person or that you don't enjoy this kind of music. Like, you're here to entertain me, and if you don't do that, I'm going to be upset. Yes. You know,
right.
And like that drives me nuts. Don't hire me for your damn corporate gig if you're just going to want Michael Jackson covers, your piece of crap. Shout out to Michael though.
And that we see that in the whole morph mindset too.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So with this ocelot, all right. When I hatched Jigsaw, I was super stoked. I'm like, holy cow. And somebody offered me Randy Mackey, who some of the old school guys are going to know. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he's real super old school guy. Used to be at Hamburg all the time, 6 foot forever, wearing a cowboy hat. so he lived 20 minutes from my work, and we started talking. We got kind of friendly, and he's like, how much you want for that? And I said, no, I don't want to sell them. I'll give you $5,000. And like, I was relatively new to breeding. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I'm not going to sell them. But so many people, you know, they see that, they get that something new, something a little bit different. Now, I could have bred him and gotten nothing at all. Yeah. But you know what, I would still enjoy him, and I would still absolutely love the animal, because he was this bright yellow carpet python with this crazy pattern, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get Keith McPeak, was his OG quote of the day today, was sometimes we fail to see the animal through the morph.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing that. Yeah, yeah. Seeing that post. Yeah,
and that's what, you know, the morphs are great. I love them. Mm-hmm. I'm not a morph guy, but some of them are really, really pretty, and you can appreciate that within the animal. But it is about appreciating the animal for what it is.
Yes.
And if it can pass on those genetics, great. If it can't, well, that's fine too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that one of the things, like, I do a lot of bloods and short tails, and I like them for the morphs and stuff, but I also do scrub pythons, and those, there's no morphs. I just like the way that they are. Like, I love everything about them, and appreciating, finding an appreciation for those has definitely brought a different perspective for me than I do for the bloods and the short tails. Like, I still love bloods and short tails for their personalities and for the snakes themselves, because I was into bloods and short tails before there was really, I mean, not before there was morphs, but before there was as many morphs as there are right now. Yeah. And growing up, I was super just like in awe of them, just their body structure and their heads.
Yeah.
And I was just so into it. Coming from that to, you know, the scrubs, where it's like, even if I wanted there to be a morph, there's no morph. So it's just, I just appreciate them for what they are. And the same thing with like the carpet you're talking about. I've had so many people come up to me about my scrub Janet, one of my captive bred Barnack scrubs. And they're like, this animal's amazing. I'll give you $2,000 for it. I was like, nope. I'll give you three. How about $3,000? No, I will not. And it's not because she has any morph or anything. I just love the animal. It's not going anywhere. Like, and then they're like, okay, well, when you produce a baby, I'm buying one. And I was like, that first clutch is mine, damn it. You can't have any. Maybe if I make more, then maybe I'll let some go.
So years ago, doing a White Plains show, and this is when albinos were probably still around $7,000-$8,000.
The albino carpets?
Albino carpets, yeah. You know, pure Darwin. And, you know, I've got John Androgna and Greg Madden right next to me, and they've got some albino Darwins on the table. And I've got my tower, and
yes,
top spot is scattershot.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude runs past their albinos and says, what is that? What is that? I want one of those. And I'm like, that's just a normal jungle. It's a normal jungle carpet. But
That's when you look over at those guys and just like, hey.
it was, and you know, and I'm good friends with both of them, and they look at me like, they're like, wow, like we should have just gotten some of those,
right?
You know,
oh man,
but yeah, and in the same way, people ask a lot of times my just normal jungles, hey, mm-hmm. Well, what morph is that? Because they've got the morph on the brain. It's that's a wild type.
Yep.
You know, there's mm-hmm. there's no genetic mutation. It's selectively bred to look like that. So I just try to selectively breed it to be the prettiest jungle possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've, you know, recently I've gotten back to, so I was doing a lot of, you know, I was doing the caramels. I was doing, you know, some coastal stuff, dabbled in IJs a little bit. I had albinos. But now, like my whole room, I've got one animal that's not yellow. Like that's not black and yellow. That's a carpet python. And just about everything else, I've gone, just because that was, when it comes to carpets, for me, that was it. That was like, mm-hmm. that's what drew me to them initially. And that's what I can still, you know, Jeremy, like you said, I can come in here and I can just look at black and yellow snakes mm-hmm. all day.
Yep.
And never get tired of it.
Yes. You
just don't get tired of it.
So what is that one snake that is not the black and yellow carpet?
That's a caramel.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe it's an Asian thing. Maybe it's no. Maybe it's the no yellow.
So I was so heartbroken. So my youngest son Max, yes. his given name at birth was Zayden. Mm-hmm. So my two youngest kids are adopted, and so we named her like so Max and Chase, both of them. Hey, Daddy, can this be my snake? Every snake that comes in the house. So that caramel ocelot was Max's. Oh, and because he's like, Daddy, can she be mine? And I said, yes, she can be mine. That way I will never sell her, ever.
Yes. You know, and you can have a sorry, it's the kids. I can't daddy yep. things. Yep, I can't yep. do
it. So I was pretty heartbroken when I lost her.
Yeah.
And a couple years ago, I picked up a caramel male from Andy Simmons, mm-hmm. and really pretty caramel. But because I still want to produce another one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bred him to a female this year. She has not been a very good breeder for me. And I don't think she's going to really get the job done this year. And she was more of an experiment. She and Delia. Now we've spoken a little bit about nutrition, and, Jeremy, you and I were texting the other day, and we're talking about nutrition with your animals. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Kribos in particular have really opened my eyes to is varied diets, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So with Delia, I got her, and it was right away, get her on rats, get her on rats, get her on rats. And she's eaten large and extra large rats for a good portion of her life. And the past 2 years that I bred her, the last time I successfully bred her was 2014. And the two subsequent pairings, she did, I think I bred her twice after that. I gave her some time off. Then I had to deal with the whole Nido thing, so I wasn't breeding anything. Mm-hmm. But she slugged out on me, and I'm like, this is weird. So the clutch beforehand was 31 fertile eggs, And we went from that to two clutches of slugs in a row with years separating them with time off. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? All right. Yeah. Now I'm into Crebos, and Crebos, they need that varied diet. Okay.
Yeah.
So you look at my freeze. I have a friend of mine just sent me a picture of Ziploc bags full of creek chub because it's trout season and creek chub really like it. So my Crebos, they get creek, like whole creek chub, whole frozen thawed creek chub, whole frozen thawed brook trout, get chicks, they get quail, they get mice. Mice make up probably 15% of their diet. Neither one of them get fed rats. I'm sure they would take them, but I have so many other prey items. So a couple years ago, I'm like, you know what? What if I started doing that with the carpets? And we'll see what happens. So I started feeding, you know, the two females that were giving me a hard time as far as producing fertile clutches, which is Delia and Cookie. I put them on a predominantly bird diet. So they're eating mostly chicks, quail. So I've got an 8-foot carpet python that I intentionally chose to feed mice to. Okay.
What?
And feed the jungle. Right?
Oh boy.
Ugh. So like that's something where it's like, oh, don't feed a mice, don't feed a mice. So it's like, you know what? I'm gonna give her mice. So she eats mice, she eats predominantly quail, chicks,
yeah,
small chickens. And then I think the biggest rat I fed her in 2 years was a medium rat she got. And but mice, small rats, and birds, that's what she eats. And what I've noticed is an increase in activity, a more enthusiastic feeding response, where when I'm defrosting food, she used to just hang out in the cage and wait for the rat to come to her. And okay, I'll eat this large rat. So now she smells food defrosting, she's perched, and she's in that classic carpet position, you know, head down, waiting for prey. And it's, so I've definitely noticed a difference in behavior with them. And I've done that with my other carpets as well. But I no longer buy even my Argentine boas. I don't feed them anything bigger than a medium rat. I stick with smaller meals. So maybe I'll give them a few prey items.
Yeah.
Instead of giving them a large rat, I'll give them two mediums or two smalls. And so I feed my Argentine boas mice and chicks also. And
that's awesome.
You know, they are real enthusiastic. They love them. And I'm interested to see this year what's going to happen with a change in prey and a more varied diet, and what that's going to do to reproduction.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it would be interesting to see for sure.
Really hopeful with that.
That'd be pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
You got to keep us posted.
Yes. Yes, please.
Yeah, absolutely will.
Yeah. All right. So we're winding down our time. We've gone a little over our time, which is totally fine. Cause we love you, dude. So before we wrap this up, we ask all of our guests one final question.
An important question.
Very important question. And that is, how many ocelot carpet pythons are you sending me this
Jeremy,
year?
No. That's not the question.
That's an important
Don't let
question
him lie
I need to
you,
know.
Okay?
That's not the question.
That's right, because I'm getting many of them. No. So the question is, What in the realm of reptiles, be it something in your personal collection or something that you've seen scouring the interwebs on your, especially now recently, not dumb phone. what in the realm of reptiles has you excited about reptiles?
Oh.
Gonna have you dig deep.
That's a hard question.
Hey, look, you can feel free to say sending Jeremy many
onslaughts.
All right. So I'm gonna give two answers. I'm gonna give a bonus. Okay. All right. I would say probably number one would be the work that's being done with Boleni right now. Mm-hmm. Where we've got keepers out there that are choosing to invest thousands and thousands of dollars in animals with no promise of any return. And they are doing the work. You know, guys like Keith and Ari, like doing the work to unlock these animals for herpetoculture. You know, doing the work to unlock these animals for the purpose of conservation, so that we don't, you know, there isn't a market for captive hatched babies. Mm. That has me pretty excited. You can't talk to Keith about Boleni and not get excited. You can't. you just can't. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, Jeremy, I am really excited about the female I'm going to send you.
Yes. Yes.
I'm excited about that. She is like, her body is like looking at me just saying, why didn't you breed me this year? And I chose to give her the year off, and her body was ready. So, but I look forward to, I'm excited to see what you do with her.
I'm very excited. I was just talking with Rob about it the other day, and I was like, you know, that ocelot zebra jag male should be ready in the fall. That could be an interesting one to do.
I think
she will be more than ready and willing.
I'm so here for it.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
So, Mike, if people want to find out more about the things that you're doing, where should they look you up? Where should they find you?
So you can go to, you just search Scattershot Exotics on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I am, you know, I hang out in my snake room, I hang out on the beach, and I fish, and I post pictures on Facebook.
You know what we gotta do? We gotta get you on Instagram. Because
no,
it's
don't.
Yes. No,
yeah.
No, hold on.
No, we kind of do though.
Hear me out. Just hear me out just for just a second. Because I was one of those people. I didn't get a smartphone until like 6 years ago, so I held out really long too, and I didn't really want to get on Instagram. And then now I kind of like Instagram better than Facebook because it's just pictures of pretty snakes all day, all these cool snakes. And you just see all the cool things that people are working with. And you don't see them posting things about how much they hate masks or how much they hate COVID or how much they're upset about this thing and that thing. It's just pictures of cool snakes all day, every day. And it's just so much cooler. And all you got to do is just post pictures of cool snakes and people will like your cool snakes. So, I mean, Facebook groups are cool for that too.
Yeah.
Instagram is awesome for that because I just scroll through pictures of pretty snakes all day. It's great.
It's true.
I thought about it and I'm like, eh.
Please, Mike. I'll be your first follower, I promise. I'm just saying, well, I will spread your stuff all around. I want to make sure that people follow you because you got some amazing animals and I love seeing
so
pictures
true.
Of them. I'm saying yeah, this selfishly that I want you on Instagram so that I can look at pictures of your snakes more regularly. It's 100% selfish. I'm admitting it right now. I'm trying to be a better person, okay?
I'm going to just start texting you pictures of my snakes.
Okay, I can deal with that too. And then I'm going to make an account called Scattershot Exotics, and I'm going to post your pictures. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. For anyone who's upset at me right now, I'm kidding. I love you, man.
Yeah, it's I'm predominantly on Facebook. Okay. I've got the Scattershot Exotics page, cool. And you'll see me in all the different groups. So there's that, I advertise on Fauna, you know, still. So,
and deliberately.
Yeah.
You know, anybody wants to reach out to me, send me a message. And that's cool. You know, awesome. I'm so it's not that I'm over social media, but
it's a, you know,
these days, I am so much more focused on the relationships, yes. You know, yeah. on the more personal relationships where I can just, you know, just chat with people. But you never know. You might see an Instagram page pop up. Who knows? I'm not promising you anything.
That's okay. That's okay. I'll live in hope. It's dangled in front of me and I'm just reaching. And then maybe when he makes the Instagram page, maybe I'll send him candy bacon cupcakes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I gotta dangle the carrot too, you know? I
gotta Damn.
And we're gonna end it on that. Thank you so much for coming on tonight, Mike.
Mike, thank
you
so much.
Thank you so much. We're gonna have to do this again sometime soon. I cannot wait to see you again.
Yeah, man. Great seeing you guys again.
Yes.
Yeah, you too, man.
We'll have to road trip down there and bring him cupcakes.
That's actually. So you don't have to ship the snake. I'm very much down with that.
I think you should.
New Jersey is a day trip. That's a day trip.
That's fair.
So we'll talk about that afterwards. But maybe we'll take a day trip and I can hand deliver you candy bacon cupcakes.
I would love it.
Awesome. All right. Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much,
Mike,
man.
Have a great night, dude.
Have a nice night. Love you.
Good night. Thank you, man.